Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for coyote hunting, fishing, and more.
We're calling West Texas, and we're filming, and we called 36 coyotes in one night.
3 years ago, I had in one morning 6 bucks that were 3.5 and older within 50 yards of my stand. 6 different bucks, one morning.
It was in October, went made my first coyote stand, me and my cousin. And very first freaking stand, guys, we caught up 7 coyotes. 7 coyotes.
Florida itself is a fisherman's paradise. We stick out in the middle of the water, man. There's water everywhere.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
This podcast brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Locally owned and operated out of Attica, Michigan, Predator Hunter Outdoors will keep you hunting when the sun goes down. Predator Hunter Outdoors has something for every budget and experience level, including lights, night vision, and thermal, as well as a full line of tripods, mounts, and predator calls. Look them up on Facebook and Instagram at Predator Hunter Outdoors, or visit their webpage at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code LIGHT for 20% off light products, and TRIPOD for 10% off tripods and mounts. Want to lengthen your time in the field and shorten your scouting time? Not only does the HuntWise app show you property boundaries, landowners' names, and in some cases even their phone number, but using the app will show you the wind direction on the map of the place you want to hunt. And the HuntCast feature shows peak movement times for various species, including predators. Get the HuntWise app at www.huntwise.com, the Google Play Store, or the Apple App Store. For only $59.99 a year for Pro or $119.99 a year for Elite. Use promo code OVERDRIVE20 for 20% off an annual membership.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast. It's me, Josh, this week, and I am talking to Austin Pressy from Texas. What's going on, Austin?
Oh, just another day in paradise, man. Another day in the Lone Star State.
Are you originally from Texas?
No, I originally grew up in Missouri, in Sedalia, just about 83 miles outside of Kansas City.
Okay, so why in the world would you go? Man, Missouri looks like it's a good, that'd be a fun state to live in.
It's a fun state to live in, but Texas is a whole lot cooler. It's a hotter state, but we can hunt anything, well, just about anything year round. So.
See, I don't know that I could do the heat. When I went down to New Mexico, we went down, I think, in 2018 or 2019, and we went and hunted with Tony Tebbe. And before we went there, he's like, ah, it's hot, but it's a dry heat. That is bullshit. Dry heat is a fake. That's fake news. There is no such thing as dry heat. It is hotter than shit, and that is the only thing there is about it.
That's how we just kind of convince ourselves that it's not that bad. It could be worse.
Oh, it's, man.
Just, we tell ourselves, hey, it's just a dry heat, and we go, yeah, all right, you know what, it sucks, but we'll live through it.
Dude, when we were there, he's like, yeah, we'll find some shade. It's like, what in the hell is shade in New Mexico? A twig, that's all we had, like a piece of
mesquite tree about that tall.
Exactly. We had a good time though, but man, I just right now, like, my wife begged for summer to come, and now even she is like, oh my god, it's hot. Like, yeah, this is what you wanted. I like October temperatures.
Hey, I'm good with October. Well, this past year, Christmas Day, it was 88 degrees, but anything 50s, 60s, 40s, 30s, 20s, I'm good with.
Dude, give once me it hoodie with
that 100 degree mark, I'm out on the 100 degree stuff, but It's where I chose to live, so it's what I get to deal with.
Yeah, at least it's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat.
Did you grow up deer hunting, all that stuff? I mean, living in Missouri, I kind of almost got to assume you did some deer hunting.
Oh, yeah. No, I grew up deer hunting in Missouri. Started out chasing rabbits with my dad and my grandpa behind some beagles and just some other random dogs that they had that they trained up for rabbit hunting. And rabbits, squirrel, deer, quail, dove. And then later in my years in Missouri, I moved out of Missouri when I was 16. But getting towards the end there of my stay in Missouri, we started chasing coyotes because dad found a passion for it and something I enjoyed doing. And it kind of carried over here to Texas a little bit.
Out of curiosity, how old are you?
31.
Oh, so you're 2 years younger than me. It's amazing talking to people that are older than us and in our similar age group and then younger. How many people in our age group started hunting with their family, doing rabbit hunts, small game hunts? Now, man, I feel like that has been lost over the years.
It's absolutely been lost.
I mean, I try to take my kids out and do some small game hunting and stuff, but there's so many freaking things that kids can do nowadays that doesn't involve them going out and doing anything. And it's pretty freaking annoying.
Yeah, it's sad is what it is. So like my two kids are here with me this weekend, and you know, today we just kind of took it easy, hung out around the house. Tomorrow they're fixing to figure out what ranch life is. Like, yeah, we've got to go an hour south of here and go work on a ranch all day. And they're going to learn to hang out in the truck and help fill feeders, help, you know, whatever I need to get done tomorrow.
But that sounds fun.
Yeah.
And there's a good chance you'll probably see some animals.
Oh yeah. We'll see all kinds of stuff tomorrow.
How old are your kids?
My son's 6 and my daughter's 2.
Oh, so not quite hunting yet.
My son's been hunting with me a couple.
Okay. Times. Successful?
Not yet. He's missed. So like, I know the audience can't see it, but my backdrop is an Audad. He's missed an Audad at 25 yards with his crossbow, but he'll get there. It's coming. But he's gone rabbit hunting, and we don't have many squirrels out here, but he's gone rabbit hunting and stuff with me like that.
No squirrels in Texas at all?
There are, just not in this part. Like, we've got little rock squirrels. They're just all black. They're about, you know, the size of a fox squirrel, but they're kind of elusive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good eating if you do get them, do you know?
About the same as a fox. Fox squirrel. Red squirrel.
Edible.
Yeah, edible. It'll eat.
We found, last year we did some fox squirrel, and we did them in the Instapot, the pressure cooker. And mm-hmm. Everybody liked that because it wasn't tough. It wasn't chewy. It wasn't stringy, nothing. They all ate it.
Yeah. They render down pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And add them into kind of like a stew or something and you're good to go.
Oh, absolutely.
So you moved to Texas when you were 16?
Yes. My dad got a job down here in the oil and gas industry out in West Texas. And so it was either stay in Missouri or go explore some giant state that I know nothing about. And I decided to go follow him down here.
Oh man. That's another thing. When we went to New Mexico, we came in at the northeast end of Texas and we had to go clear across that entire state. And that has got to be the longest state to ever drive through.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you got 3 hours further east of there and depends on where you drove into New Mexico at, you've got another 4 or 5 hours west still to go.
We came through, well, we were in like Lovington, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
So we went.
So you went up and into the panhandle.
Yes, but we went from like one end of Texas clear to the other freaking end of Texas. And I swear, yeah, we came into Texas and it was still light out. And we exited Texas when the sun was coming back up.
Oh yeah, that's easy to do. It's a haul from East Texas all the way out to West Texas.
Yeah,
I've been as far as 2 hours from El Paso to an hour from Louisiana in a single day.
So where are you based at?
Right now I'm based out of Rock Springs.
Okay. And you know, this whole conversation basically is going to be about your company, Wicked 7 Outdoors.
Yep.
What is Wicked 7 Outdoors and how did that come to be?
Wicked 7 Outdoors just kind of started out as a dream or a thought, right? Like I was hunting on a piece of property over in West Texas. There was this killer 7-point whitetail, just massive brow tines, long tines, but he only had 7 points. I was like, oh dude, that's a wicked 7-point. And then my buddy and I were like, oh, okay. Like, and we just kind of started playing with it. We're like, oh yeah, Wicked 7. Oh, Wicked 7 Outdoors. And so that's kind of how that came about. But what we are is we're a multifaceted company. So I run a guide service. I run a ranch consulting service. I run exotic trapping and sales. Basically, if there's something a ranch needs, I fill that void. So right now I'm working with the ranch. They're wanting to start selling hunts to keep the ranch from selling. I've put quite a bit of hunts on their books already, and I've only been doing this part of it for that ranch for 2 months. So not to brag about it, whatever. I don't know. Just kind of explaining how it is. Other ranches, they call me and I charge them a consulting fee. I charge, you know, hey, if I sell your hunts, it's going to be a 10% commission on whatever I sell. So if I sell an Axis hunt for $3,500, I get paid $350. If I go guide it, I get paid $250 a day to go guide. That's just kind of the way I set it up. It keeps me from doing work for free, but it also, it's at a price point that any ranch can afford.
So basically you're taking ranches that are in at risk of failing right now?
Some, yeah. Others, they're well established. They have a hard time finding the clientele for the hunts that they have. And so I try to find those hunters to fill the void for.
So when a ranch has a problem like that, is that mostly due to cost most of the time, you think?
Cost, not knowing market value of animals. I've got some ranches that are way too cheap, some ranches that are way too expensive. I try to consult on both of those and say, hey, you need to come up over here. You need to go down over here, you know? But it's there's so many little things that could cause a ranch to need what I offer. So
what all, I mean, out of all those things you mentioned that you do, what part of it is your favorite?
Guiding hunts.
Absolutely.
I like taking people out. You know, it's not, we can do it one of two ways, really. We can go out and spot and stalk, which is my favorite way to do it. Or we can go sit in a blind over a feeder. Texas, it's legal. I mean, non-game species, you can hunt 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with any method you choose, right? Anything that's non-native to Texas. Elk is non-game, red stag is non-game, axis, audad, fallow, sika, black buck, zebra, your African plains game. Basically anything that's not a whitetail, a turkey, a dove, a duck, and certain fishes.
That's a lot of non-native species.
Oh, we're overrun. I mean, everybody always talks about the pig problem in Texas, but yep. Nobody ever hits on the exotic problem in Texas. Well, I live in go ahead.
I didn't hear you mention hogs at all in any of that. So is that part of what you guys offer?
Yeah. I mean, I'll go, if a ranch calls me and says they got a hog problem, I'll go out there and gladly shoot every one of them that they got indiscriminately.
You got to have a lot of fun doing that. I see a lot of people shooting hogs and that looks like a blast, but it looks like you could go through a whole lot of ammo.
You going to kill a couple hundred dollars a week in ammo chasing pigs. it gets expensive real quick.
That's like three boxes right now.
I mean, yeah, if you're not shooting 17 HMR, it's three boxes.
Yeah, true.
Believe it or not, 17 HMR is my preferred caliber on predators and pigs.
Where do you aim on a pig with 17 HMR? Right in the head?
Right in the ear.
Okay. Yep.
17 HMR. Send it right through the ear canal.
Okay. 17. So here in Michigan, we used to have a law where you could only coyote hunt at night with a rimfire or a shotgun. So we were limited to 22, 17 HMR. I killed my very first coyote ever with a 17 HMR. Now I've moved up and my preferred rimfire round, I don't have to use it anymore. The only time I have to use a rimfire is if I'm hunting state land at night down in my area. If you go an hour north of me, you can use a centerfire up to 0.269 diameter bullet. So that 17 super magnum down here, though, when I do take that out, I don't hate that caliber, but you got to be pretty pinpoint accurate to get them to fall where you want them to, you know?
Absolutely.
But those 17s are pretty freaking accurate too.
They're accurate. I mean, as long as that pig's within, really, you can stretch it out to 100.
Yep.
But if I'm shooting something as small as a 17 at a pig, I'm wanting them within 50.
What do you choose for that? Do you know?
Just whatever I can get my hands on.
Okay.
Because I mean, if you can thread the needle through that ear hole, you're going to hit everything you want to hit, and it's done. Now, if you miss, if you pull the shot, you're going to pierce his ear. You're going to hit him, you know, kind of a glancing shot. But that's usually why we've got somebody else with a shotgun riding back up.
Okay. So you said all those non-native species, the non-game animals, you can hunt 24/7?
24/7, 365. No, you go out and shoot 50, 60 axis a night if you can find a place that has free range access.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with elk.
How come, and you might not know the answer to this, but why wouldn't Texas, man, if they have that many of them, you'd think Texas could make a lot of money on sales of tags to hunt some of those animals, or do you need a license to hunt them?
Okay, so you have to have a small game or just a general hunting license to hunt those. Now, they did away with the requirement for a hunting license for pigs, which that's fine. It is what it is. They're losing a bunch of revenue.
Yep.
People come from all over the world to hunt pigs here in Texas. But at the same time, they come all over the world to hunt our exotics too.
Okay.
You can go to Hawaii and go shoot an axis, or you can come to Texas and shoot an axis. Most people come to Texas because it's a little bit more affordable and not nearly as hard of a hunt as what it would be in Hawaii. But I'm up for whichever way anybody wants to do it. That's the way I think it needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if somebody's buying a hunt to go do something, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You messaged me, what, a week or two ago? Or no, I think you commented and you said, come on down, hunt the coyotes on ground that's never been called.
Yeah.
So you guys, you got quite the amount of coyotes where you're at?
Coyotes are a little finicky because it's hill country and you never know day to day where they're going to be at, right? Okay. So it's not like, it'd be like taking the West Texas desert and throwing it with the Ozarks and then finding a coyote somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Right? They're tough. Now, I've got property way out in West Texas. I've got property, you know, here and there all the way across the state. But I'm on 60,000 acres. I can literally hop from one ranch to another and just keep rolling down the highway as long as somebody's got time to come shoot.
See, that we need to get down there and do that sometime. When this gas prices drop below, you know, like $3, it'd be way more affordable to do that.
Yeah. It was $3.99 here the other day, and I couldn't have been happier. I filled up for $87.
Oh, man, that's a hell of a bargain.
Well, I was like, oh, I remember these days. This is nice.
It's so sad when we think that that's a bargain.
It's better than that $3.79.
Oh, I know, man. And we're sitting at like $4.39 a gallon or something right now. It's been going down, but I was with my brother-in-law the other day, and I'm like, oh, look, it's only $4.40. And he goes, that's the problem. We look at that and we say it's only $4.40. Like, cheese and pizza, it's still going to cost me $100 to fill up.
I've got a group of girls that come out of Michigan that come and hunt with me. They drive the whole trip, 24 or 25 hours.
Yep.
And I'm like, you girls are nuts. But they came down, they hunted one weekend, they turned around and booked for another hunt in the fall. I was like, hey, y'all come down as many times as y'all want to.
Right. Yeah, when we went to New Mexico, we made that a straight through trip, and we decided next time we make that trip, we're doing at least two trips. But we need sleep.
Absolutely.
That lasts like 5 hours, especially through Texas, got to be like, holy crap, when are we going to get there?
You start beating your head into the steering wheel trying to wake up.
Yeah, we were blasting music pretty loud and just watching the sun come up, and I remember some part of Texas, I don't know where it was, somewhere from start to finish of that 14 hours across that state. I think we only saw two coyotes, but we stopped at an off-ramp somewhere, and we just kind of got out and stretched. Well, we had our thermals with us, and there was a big field out to our right, and we scanned it, and there's like five coyotes walking around, and like, geez, oh, Pete's, man, this is way different than living in Michigan.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the one thing I always kick myself in the butt for, you know, whenever I lived in West Texas, I never bought a thermal. I still to this day don't have a thermal.
Yep.
Like I watch your, you know, your social medias and all that stuff. And I look at your guys' thermal images and I look at your videos and I'm like, man, I just need to buckle down and buy one. But I had 24,000 acres in West Texas, and holy smokes. Then, I mean, we'd go out and kill 5 or 6 coyotes without putting a collar out.
Okay.
That's just driving around the ranch roads and sniping them off the prairie dog towns. I couldn't imagine what we'd do to them if we had thermals out there.
You know, so what are you doing? I mean, are you using lights?
Yeah, I'm just running the Killzone Raptor Pro scan light.
Okay.
But Jody McCarthy over in Houston, or close to Houston, he makes them.
Okay. The problem with lights is you don't get eye shine unless they're looking at the light most of the time.
Right.
Thermal, it don't matter where they're looking. It's just, I don't know. It probably takes some of the skill away from it a little bit, because it does make it easier to see everything and watch body language. But that's also helped me learn a lot about coyotes, is being able to see how they're reacting. And with a light, you just could never do that.
Right. I don't think it takes away from it. I mean, I've hunted with guys that have had thermals.
Yep.
I don't think it takes away from it, because you still got to be in a place that has coyotes.
Yeah.
You still got to be able to call them in. You got to get them to respond to a call, and you got to get them to come towards that call.
Yep.
I don't think it takes away from it at all, honestly.
I just think that it makes it a little bit easier, because you can actually see more, you know.
Sure.
I think that brings your success rate up a whole lot, being able to see way more than you can with a light. But I haven't light hunted in a couple of years, and I really need to just throw a light on. But now I hate shining lights around, because we get so much negative attention at night. Even just parked on the side of a road here, we get negative attention. We get neighbors that stop and police that stop. I've never had COs, DNR officers stop me at night, usually just state police and city boys. But I just, man, being out there behind a light, I was out with a guy a couple years ago, and I had thermal and he had a light, and I'm like, and I just, I don't like watching that light fly back and forth anymore.
Well, and it's the same thing with like suppressors and unsuppressed, you know. I went hunting with a couple guys, I got a 30-06 that I hunt coyotes with every once in a while. I took it out and like, just leave that in the truck here, take one of ours. And it was a suppressed 6.5, which I'm not the world's biggest fan of the 6.5. It's a great round for predators, but past that, I don't use it. He goes, unsuppressed is rude. Take our rifle. I was like, all right, cool. These are my kind of people.
It is definitely awesome. I put that off for a while, and Kevin kept telling me, just buy one now and you'll have it in a year. Well, then I waited a year, and then he's like, buy one now and you'll have it in a year. And then I waited a year, and then I bought it. And now that I have it, dude, it turns my 243 into a 22. I mean, it is so much quieter, and I can't say I'm going to rush out and buy another one, because I still got to wait for approval and the government to get off their butts and just approve stuff. But it certainly is very nice to have one.
Yes, sir. And I don't know if it's this way all the way across the state, but I've got some guys that came and hunted with me last week. They ordered their suppressor 2.5 months ago and got approved and got it back.
Oh, see, there's a lot of people I'm seeing, even with the new e-file stuff, that are still waiting there half a year already. I know Kevin had mentioned in a podcast a couple weeks ago, somebody had posted that they like bought one in the morning and they went and picked it up that same day. It just got approved like that.
Is that lucky?
That guy's got his hands in somebody's pockets.
That ain't no lie. Like, does he know the governor? Does he know, you know, like somebody at the ATO?
Exactly.
That's like, oh yeah, instant approve.
So what
I could never get that with me.
No, heck no. Mine was only supposed to, well, I was told originally 9 months and it ended up being 13. So,
whew.
Yeah, but that method is over. So hopefully the new way will eventually speed stuff up. But so out of all the animals you mentioned that you guide for, what do you think your favorite animal to guide hunts on is?
Why? Woo, they'll piss you off quicker than anything will. You can have an audad patterned, right? You can have him patterned down to like, all right, at 10:53 a.m., he's going to take two steps to the left, and then he's going to run straight at us. And then he's going to stop and turn broadside, right? And he'll do that same thing every day for 2 weeks, for a month. You go out there to hunt him, he doesn't show up. He will not show up. You'll see him 1,200 yards off on the side of a cliff. And you'll go, oh, okay. Yeah. You win today. You win this time.
Are audads smart animals?
Oh, they're incredibly intelligent.
Okay.
Everybody looks at them like, oh, it's a stupid goat or it's a stupid sheep. That thing's smarter than any whitetail I've ever chased.
Do they use their nose a lot, or are they more with their eyes, or what?
I would say it's 60-40 eyes and nose.
Okay.
So they can see at 100 yards what we can see at 10.
Oh.
They're kind of like pronghorn antelope, their vision. You know, you've hunted turkey, right?
Yeah, not successfully.
Hey. Don't feel bad. After 16 years of chasing them, I finally shot my first one 2 months ago.
Well, congratulations. I didn't even buy a tag this year. That's how excited I was about it.
They see like a turkey does. Okay. If a turkey sees one thing that's out of place, it's a no-go. We're not going back there for 2 weeks. And they won't show up. They'll just, no, I'm good. We'll go down the road a little ways. And it don't matter if it's high-fenced. Like, I live on 50 acres that's high-fenced.
Okay.
I've got audad here. I study these audad like I'm going in for an audad PhD. If I go sit in the blind and I move something wrong, they will not come back to this one spot for 2 weeks.
Really?
I'll have to go sit somewhere else on 50 acres and go try again.
In a high fence.
In a high fence. And now this is a small high fence. This is where I take like kids that want to go, you know, shoot their first exotic or, you know, something that doesn't have a whole lot of challenge, but it's good exposure, okay. Right? You know, you're going to see them. You're going to see them in a timely fashion. And it just is what it is, right? It's, as I said before, I've got multiple different ways of doing things. This is a small canned hunt. If you really want to get after it, we can go to 6,000 acres in Presidio, Texas, which is right on the border of Mexico. And it's nothing but hills and canyons, and you're more than welcome to join me hiking up and down trying to find one. And it's all low fence. So you may never see an audad. You could go out there for 2 weeks and never see one. They're there. The people that own that place have killed 30 over 30. The magic mark on audad is 30 inches. That's how you know it's a mature ram. And
now you're talking one side, 30 inches?
One side.
Okay.
One side. Okay. So usually a good mature ram will be 30 inches long or better with 13 to 15 inch bases.
Oh, geez, oh, Pete's.
You're talking about a big animal. They weigh close to 300 pounds.
Okay.
They live 18 to 20 years in the wild.
Holy cow.
And it takes a long time for them to get that big. So you stick around in one area for 18 to 20 years, you start to wise up on things that are new that weren't there yesterday.
So maybe stupid question, but do audad shed their?
No, sir. So no, they're continuous. They're continuous growth.
Okay, it's because there's some animals that just like shed the sheath off, right, and then grow another sheath. Yeah, like,
I've heard pronghorn do, but I've never been able to confirm or prove that one way or the other. So I don't know. But audad definitely do not shed.
Okay, so they just continuously keep growing.
They'll grow for the longevity of their life.
So what's the biggest one you've ever taken?
Me? I've never shot a ram yet.
Or anybody that you've taken hunting.
34.
So how old do you think that one was?
14, 15.
Holy cow. And that
it's hard to guess. It's hard to guess on age, but you just kind of you watch and you say, okay, at a year old, they have 8-inch horns.
Okay.
And then, okay, at 2 years old, he's got 16. Okay. And then after that, it starts halving. So at 2 years old, he may be 16. The next year, he may only put on 3 to 4 inches.
Okay.
Then he might put on 2 to 3 inches, 1 to 2 inches, half an inch every year after that.
Okay. And what about, do you guys eat them?
You can.
But you don't?
I like it.
Okay.
I like it. I have a lot of hunters that are, social media has ruined a lot of hunting for a lot of people in a lot of ways. So Audad meat to me, it's a real dense, real rich.
What would you compare it to?
Bighorn sheep.
Okay. So for us that haven't ever tried that. Well, do we have anything store-bought at all or anything that it compares?
Get you a really tough steak from like your local
Walmart
grocery store, not like Walmart, but you know, a smaller grocery store than a Walmart.
Okay.
Like out here we have Lowe's. They're tough. They're tough meat, but if you know how to marinate and know how to tenderize meat on your own without beating the snot out of it and making it into like chicken fry, it actually turns out pretty good.
Low and slow, cook them.
Cook it low and slow.
Have you ever pressure cooked one?
I have not, but I bet it would be pretty good.
Yeah, everything, man. Everything seems to be so I take when I get a deer, I take the rear rump and I'll basically cut a bunch of that up into stew chunks. Mm-hmm. And those are usually if we crock pot them for a while, they're usually still kind of tough. But when I pressure cook that stuff for 45 minutes or so, I mean it melts like butter in your mouth. I like the pressure cooker for doing meats like that that might not necessarily be the best cut or anything, but it'll tenderize pretty much anything.
Well, the next one we shoot, which fingers crossed this guy shows up. I haven't heard from him in 2 days, but got a guy coming to shoot two on Friday. If he shoots one and doesn't take any of the meat, because like I said, a lot of people won't take it, I'll overnight you or put some on dry ice, send it up to you and let you try it. I'll send you a backstrap.
Oh, I would love that. That'd be awesome.
Just try it out, you know. So some people love it, some people hate it, and there's some people that are in between.
When you guys offer these hunts, let's say somebody says they want to go for an Audad, do you have specific places that are Audad only, or do you guys mix species into some of these different places that they all live together, coexist?
So I've got this relatively new place that I picked up. It's all low fence. It's 6,000 acres, about an hour from my house. So it's low fence. We never know what's going to show up or when it's going to show up or how it's going to show up. So there's free range muntjac, which are the world's smallest deer. Muntjac, M-U-N-T-J-A-C.
Yep.
There's sika. There's fallow. They've had Nilgai, Eland, Kudu, the Audad, obviously. On that ranch, we've got a resident herd of about 250 Audad.
And that's how
Red Stag,
you said?
6,000.
Okay.
Red Stag, Elk, Black Buck occasionally. So you never know what's going to show up. Now, I do have ranches that are only specific animals. And then I have ranches that are, hey, everything's just fend for itself, you know, and those are kind of more high fence. They appeal to a different type of client. And I've noticed in my years of doing this, there is no in between. I've never met a person that's like, yeah, I don't really care if somebody wants to go high fence or not. It's either hard yes, I'll hunt high fence, or hard yes, I'd rather just do it low fence.
Yep.
I've never met somebody that's like, oh, I don't care which way it goes.
Yeah, I mean,
I've only been doing this for a few years.
There's different aspects to that. I mean, yeah, if you want like a high fence hunt, and correct me if I'm wrong, damn near guaranteed?
No, not always. Now, on my 50 acres,
yep. Yeah.
I'll 100% guarantee you'll walk out of here with something unless you don't pull the trigger.
Okay.
That's the only way you're not walking out of there with something. My odd dad here actually bed like just on the other side of this wall that I'm sitting in front of. I don't know why, but it is what it is. Some high fence places, I've got a place over near Sanderson. It's 24,000 acres. And it's got just about anything you could ever want. It's got Gemsbok, it's got waterbuck, it's got sheep of all different species. It's got axis, fallow, black buck, nilgai, you name it or want it, it's probably out there. I spent 2 days out there and only saw six different animals.
That's a lot of freaking property to fence in, though. I mean, when you talk a high fence in 24,000 acres, yeah, I can imagine that you might struggle, because even in a weekend, you're not going to cover 24,000 acres.
Mm-mm. You can drive around in a high rack buggy and make some pretty good ground, but you're not going to cover all of it.
That's incredible. That was one thing that blew me away about New Mexico too. When I was with Tony and I'm like, how many acres is this? He goes, oh, we don't talk in acres. We talk in sections. Like, nobody around here owns sections. We are broken up by 20 acre, 50 acre, 60 acre, 100 acre, just little farms. And while we have landowners, like I have certain landowners that own fields, you know, for 20 miles, they're all still sporadic. You know, it's not all, they don't own 20 miles of just straight up property. That was interesting going through Texas, going into New Mexico. Like, that whole area, everything you can see is owned by one person.
Yeah, and it gets worse in certain places. You can drive for hours through some ranches and never see either side of the gate.
Jesus, Pete.
And that's what makes those ranches fun.
You never know
what you're going to come across.
So do you ever do night hunts for any of the other species? I mean, like, have you sold a nighttime elk hunt?
No, I haven't guided any elk, just because, like, the one ranch that I've got elk on, they're so hit or miss, right? They're either going to be there or they're not. But figuring out exactly, I've got 10 trail cameras on that ranch right now, and I still have yet to get pictures of elk. I see elk sign everywhere. Have yet to see an elk. I know they're there. The ranch has got pictures from previous data that elk are there. But no, I haven't done any like night vision or thermal or light nighttime elk hunts.
That is crazy.
It is legal. You can do it.
But yeah, that's nuts.
I go to any other state, anywhere else in the country that has elk, you're drawing tags or you're buying over the counter tags.
Yeah, or you're
Texas. We're like, just shoot them. Yeah, or you're poaching.
So when you get into elk, are you towards? I mean, is there any spot, any particular area of the state that has more elk because of, I don't know, being close to Mexico or New Mexico?
I would say where I live has the largest density of elk.
Oh, okay.
But they're not all free range. They're all behind the high fence.
Yeah.
And that's going back to the high fence thing too. I mean, there's certain animals that have gone extinct in their native habitat that are thriving here in Texas because of high fences.
Like,
so your scimitar horned oryx, up until a couple of years ago, they're an all white Gemsbok with a red head, but their horns kind of curve back. Those up until a year ago, 2 years ago, those were completely extinct in the Sahara Desert.
Oh, no.
A Texas ranch actually got together, got a bunch of other ranches to donate a herd of scimitars and sent them back across to Africa, and they're thriving. Same thing with the Dama gazelle. The Nile lechwe is almost extinct over there. We've got a bunch of them here. Bunch of different species. Those are just the two that everybody talks about because that's the new thing. So
with any of those animals, like, any of them really, you said you offer spot and stalk or over feeder hunts, right? So basically baited hunts. Do you do anything based on the time of the year? I mean, do any of these animals have a rut that you're like, guys, if you guys want to have a good hunt, you need to get here at this point?
Oh, yeah. So the all dead rut's coming up in September.
Okay.
And it is, it's wild. You'll wake up in the morning and hear rams crashing into each other on top of the mountains. I say mountains, really large hills out here in the hill country of Texas. If any of your viewers have ever been to it, they'll understand what we mean by mountains. I think our tallest peak out here is like 2,600 feet.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it's not big, you know, but we call them mountains because, hey, it's close enough for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the axis rut happens twice a year. You've got summer rut and winter rut, and it all depends on which part of the year the babies were born. So if you've got a winter buck, he's going to winter rut. If you got a summer buck, he's going to summer rut. They drop horns on their birthdays. It's pretty neat.
If a buck is going to rut at that point, I mean, are the does rutting when they're born too? I mean, is that when they're in heat?
Yep.
No kidding.
Your summer bucks are rutting, your summer does are rutting.
That's
just kind of the way that's the way that goes.
So do they have two? I mean, will a female, what do they call a doe?
A doe, yeah.
So will those does drop fawns twice a year?
Just once a year. So they'll drop their fawns. So if, let's see.
You just said one animal that ruts twice, right?
Right, axis bucks. So you can have a whole herd of axis bucks. Some will be no antler. Some will be starting antler. Some will be hardhorn. Some will be velvet antler.
No kidding.
All in the same herd. It just depends on when they were born.
That's got to be like the first time I've ever heard of animals doing that.
If you come down here and see me, I'll show you. I'll show you whole fields of them that are like that.
That's crazy. So you got bucks, like right now, we've got bucks that are probably a month and a half, whitetail bucks, about a month and a half from rubbing their velvet off, but they're all going to be doing that.
Yep. But these axis deer, don't.
That's crazy.
We've got fallow deer that are already rubbed off.
Huh.
I've got axis deer that are already hard antlered. I've got axis deer that are already dropping their antlers, and I've got axis deer that are just starting out in velvet.
So at some point you can have a doe that's in heat, a buck that's rutting, and another buck that just walks right by that same doe and is like, no, whatever.
No, not today.
That is
I'm crazy. Good. It's a wild deal, man. And I wish I had them out here close by. I mean, they are out here by the house nearby, but because we're so late into the summer rut, you won't be able to hear them. They roar like, I'll send you a file to it or something. Their roar while they're in rut is like nothing you've ever heard before. It's crazy.
So on any of these hunts, do you use any kind of calls?
No, it's mainly just knowing where they're going to be and when they're going to be there.
Okay. I mean, I don't think
you can.
Go ahead.
You can use an act. Primos, I think, makes an axis call. They make a doe call and a buck grunt roar call. I don't mess with any of that stuff. If you know where your animals are going to be at, you don't need it.
So do you not mess with whitetail at all while you're in Texas?
I do. It's not my favorite thing to guide. Whitetail are dumb. And they're extremely stupid.
Okay.
I don't know. I've been ruined on whitetail. My biggest whitetail I've ever shot was 120 inches, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe 120 inches. And I've guided 240 inch whitetail. They're just dumb. Everybody wants to hunt whitetail one way down here. And they're just dumb.
So
you set a feeder to go off at 7:30. You can guarantee that your whitetail is going to be there at 7:30. The hunter's back in his truck by 8.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, everything that I've seen, just the videos I see from Texas, they're all usually in a blind looking down a lane to a feeder somewhere.
Yeah. And that me saying it that way kind of came off pretentious, but I'm not opposed to it. If it's legal in your state, if it's legal and you're fine with it, I'm fine with it. Hunt them how you want to.
Oh, yeah.
As long as it's legal. You know, I don't ever want to bash a hunter or knock somebody's way of doing things. And don't get me wrong, that is a great method for kids, elderly, people that don't have the woodsman skills. But I like to spot and stalk. I'm primarily shoot with a bow.
And spot and stalk, though, you've got to be able to see quite a ways.
Or no travel routes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we it's been a couple years now, but Michigan used to be able to bait. And I did, but I always did it pretty much just to get trail camera pictures. Michigan bucks, maybe they're a little bit different than Texas bucks. I don't know, but not very many people when you were baiting killed big bucks off of bait sites in Michigan. I mean, you might kill one that followed a doe that came into it, but like the only time I would even get pictures on a bait pile was in the middle of the night of anything decent. I never got anything big. Now they banned it because of the
CWD
claim of it transmitting CWD between animals. And the only reason I really wish that we could do it again, and like you said, I don't care how anybody wants to do it. If that's what gets you out hunting, then do it. But the only reason I really care that they would bring it back is because it would be nice, like you said, to be able to bring my kids out and be like, there will be deer here at some point. I mean, it's going to happen, rather than how it is now of hopefully they come through and follow this trail because that's all we got to hunt now. You know, yep. I don't mind hunting like that. I don't know. I wish we could bait just for the purpose of getting people involved and having them be successful. And, you know, even shooting a doe on a bait pile, I had a lot of fun doing that. And I know my kids would too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've done it.
Yeah.
Whenever I was working in West Texas in the oil and gas industry, my old boss would give me, we have MLD, management land deer program tags. Basically the state comes in, survey says, hey, you've got 300 deer, here's 60 tags.
Okay, kind of like a crop damage permit here?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
And so he, end of the year, he'd give me the book of tags and say, go fill the rest of them, whatever's left. There's only one way to get that done in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
That's sit over a feeder 100 yards away with a 30-06 or something that can drop them where it hits. And you just shoot 10, 15 of them. You don't have to punch a single one of your own tags under that program. Yeah. And you're just doing a landowner a favor. That's all that is. And you take the meat, you know, donate it, give it away, eat it, whatever.
Yeah. Of all the species that you do guide or that you hunt there, what do you think your favorite one to kill and eat is?
Kill and eat, like if I could do it, the axis deer. Their meat is some of the best meat you can get your hands on. That and Neil guy. Neil guy looks like a turkey, horse, cow with horns. I don't know how else to explain it. They're all black. They've got a turkey beard, a horse head, the body of a cow, and they've got little spikes that are about that long.
I have seen that on some videos.
They're the weirdest looking thing. They eat like nothing else. They taste amazing. Same thing with axes. Axes are, I mean, I've got two axes hanging up on the wall here. They just taste good. And what, there's plenty of them.
What about that little itty bitty deer?
Mountain Jack?
Yeah.
Oh, that's like eating jackrabbit. They're smaller. Well, they're about the same size as a big jackrabbit.
No, that small?
They're tiny.
Get out of here. A deer?
A deer. It's a mountain jack.
I guess I didn't know they were that small. I thought they were like the size of like a lab.
No. No, they're itty bitty. You pick them up and hold them with one hand.
Get out of here.
They might weigh 20 pounds. Might.
Dude, that is crazy. And those weren't.
And they just. Go ahead.
Those weren't native.
No. They come from India?
Man.
Argentina? I don't know where they come from. You guys, I just know that if I see one, I can shoot one.
You guys got crazy, crazy animals down there then.
Yeah. We've got things that, I mean, well, up until a few years ago, you couldn't find anywhere else in the world.
Do you do any?
Do I do any fishing? Oh, yeah. Nothing crazy. My spy point just went off. I've got Audette at the feeder. it gets me riled up every time. Every time them Audettes show up on that free range place, I get stupid excited. I do bass fishing and stuff, like over at that ranch that I was just talking about, that camera just went off. I go over there and fish about once, twice a week.
Yeah, you sent me a picture a couple weeks ago, one. You had like your whole arm in that thing's mouth, didn't you?
Yeah, that's just a small bass. Nothing crazy.
Yeah.
That's
a
small bass. That was probably a new pole. That was a new personal bass.
Jeez, oh, Pete's. Well, it sounds like you guys have all kinds of stuff to keep you busy down there.
Oh, yeah. It's ranching's a full-time job down here. Exotic ranching's a full-time and a half job. If I could find a way to clone myself, I'd still be too busy.
So what do you think the hardest part of all of it is?
Keeping stuff alive in the drought.
Are you guys in a drought right now?
A little bit.
Yeah, we are too.
I mean, it's drier than it's ever been down here.
That bad.
We get a shower, maybe a shower every day, but it lasts 2 or 3 minutes and it's gone, and it's already soaked up by the time it's over with.
Yeah.
I mean, it's done nothing to bring the lake levels up. I've got one pond at that ranch. We're 18 feet low.
Holy cow.
And I don't think I'm exaggerating.
So in times like that, what do you do to try to help make sure the animals survive?
550-gallon water totes.
Okay.
Fill them up with a garden hose and water everything you can.
And that would take a lot of work, especially doing it one person.
You just fill that tote up and you drive around and put a bucket out every 500, 600 yards and just hope something finds it and drinks out of it.
How long did you say Wicked 7 has been around?
We started in 2019.
Okay. Couple years now. You're 4 years in, roughly 3 years in.
Yeah, roughly 4 years.
So far, has it all been worth it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't. This is what every kid my age that grew up in the woods dreams of doing. Not living in the outdoors. I live in a little 12x30 cabin. It's close enough to living in the outdoors. All the outdoor critters are inside.
Dude, I would take that.
I love it. You get to watch wildlife. You get to see animals interact in a way that you wouldn't otherwise get to see them. You know, I can't think of anything I'd rather do. Now, granted, I took a year off from all this and I went and chased the race car stuff, you know, the big TV show race car stuff and all that. That was fun. I came right back to this though. This is what I want to do. I mean, I couldn't picture myself doing anything else.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could function at a normal 9-to-5 job anymore. Dude, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the easiest. I mean, luckily for me, I'm a CNC machinist. I like where I work. I enjoy my job, and I enjoy the majority of my coworkers. But if the right opportunity came up, like doing something like what you do, I don't think it would hurt me too bad to walk away from what I do, because yeah, what I love, I mean, as much as I like my job, my passion is not my job. And like they've always said, and I've heard it forever, find a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Absolutely.
So have you worked a day since you started this?
No, I haven't. I feel like a kid half the time. I'm like, you know, run around out in the, you know, drive around in the truck, go cruise the fields, go, you know, I don't feel like I ever work. There's days that I cuss the heat. There's days where I'm like, this just absolutely sucks. But then I go, wait a minute. I'm doing what everybody always tells me. Oh man, it must be nice to be able to go do that every day. Oh man, you're so lucky. Well, to an extent, yes. You know, it's, it, Don't get me backwards or nothing. It's work. It's labor intensive. These animals depend on me every day. And it doesn't matter if it's the free range place or if it's a high fence place. Those animals depend on you. I supplemental feed every ranch I have access to. I want to make sure that my animals are in the best health they can possibly be in for when somebody comes to hunt them.
Yep.
I don't want a skinny, mangy looking, just nasty looking animal. Somebody's not going to shoot that. It's going to die of old age and die of predators or die of something else, disease, sickness, whatever, on these other ranches. I don't want that. I want my animals. I say my animals. I don't own any animals. I don't own anything. But I want the animals that I look after to be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, going back to people saying you're so lucky and blah, 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 people have said that to us, too, about, you know, having our thermals and stuff like that. People don't – what people got to realize is that luck – a hard work oftentimes to other people looks like luck. Yeah. You know, it takes people a long time to get to the places that they are. And while I can look at you and be like, man, you are so lucky to be doing that, I'm jealous of you. If I wanted to do it bad enough and I pushed myself bad enough to do it, I would be doing the same thing. Now I'm here with my three kids, my wife, my family, my mortgage, my house, my job. I feel like I am now almost too far gone. Now, I might not necessarily be. There might always be an opportunity somewhere that comes up, but I feel like I missed that call somewhere down the line. You know, I got everything else going with my family and my life before I figured out who I was, who I wanted to be, and what I wanted to do. And now it's just like, man, dude. Do you uproot everything to try to do something, or do you just keep pushing? And like I said, it's kind of easy for me because I do enjoy my job. But like I said, too, you give me the right opportunity and I'll be working, doing something like you do.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, gosh, there's so many things. If there's somebody out there that's listening to this and they want to get into this industry, do it. Take the jump. You're going to find out real quick whether it's for you or it's not.
Yep.
You're either built for this industry or you're not. The whole fake it till you make it, you will get exposed in a very big hurry. So don't try that method. It doesn't work. Yep. Just get out there and grind. Yep. Make connections. I didn't make this company of mine a thing. Really, until I started going out and jumping off the ledge and meeting landowners, ranches, making connections. That's the only way you can do it. You can't do it from sitting back and going, oh, man, that guy's so lucky. He's got it like this. Well, yeah. No, you need to dive in. I have missed multiple things of my kids because, hey, I've got this hunt scheduled 6 months ago. I've got to be there. I can't back out on a client.
Yeah.
I've got to be there. Birthday parties, holidays, 4th of July, I was guiding hunts. I could have been 5 hours away blowing fireworks up with my kids.
Yep.
My kids' mom and I were not together, but we still, you know, we still do holidays and things like that with the kids.
Yep.
Father's Day, I was guiding hunts. Mother's Day, I was guiding hunts. The only thing I won't book a hunt on is my kids' birthdays, but that's the only time I won't do it. Everything else other than that, I mean, it's my livelihood. If I'm not guiding hunts or working on a ranch, I'm not making any money, and I've got to have money to pay for these kids.
Oh yeah absolutely. Kids aren't cheap and food isn't either.
No, nothing about these kids are cheap.
We just got back from the grocery store before we got on this meeting here, and yeah, three kids feeding them all, that's not a fun bill every week.
No. Yeah, and I mean, like I said, if somebody wants in this industry, they can reach out to me. I'll give them all the pointers and the do's and the don'ts, and I'm not an expert. I don't know everything, and I have no problem admitting that.
Yeah.
I can tell you what's worked for me and what hasn't worked for me. And you just go from there. Take, you know, if somebody wants in this industry, do it. We need more people in this industry.
Yeah.
Any facet of this industry, honestly. Yeah. Our coyote problem isn't going away. Our hog problem isn't going away. Our, you know, you name it. If it's a problem, it's not going away anytime soon.
I can't believe, I mean, we see a lot of predator hunters from Texas. I'm surprised your guys' coyote problem is as bad as what it seems to be.
I know teams that go hunt contests and they kill 100 coyotes every day.
So that's nuts.
Every time they go out. The trick is they've got ranches that have lots and lots of acreage.
Yeah.
They never call. They don't go to these ranches and call until contest time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they know, hey, if all I got to do to win $100,000 is go call in 5 coyotes and shoot 1 cat over 28 pounds.
Yeah.
And I've got a chance in the winning. I'm going to be saving them spots too.
Yeah. We got people here that do the same thing. They pick up ground and they only hunt it during tournament time. But for me, I almost, in a way, and not to sound negative about it, but I almost coyote hunt like it's a job for some of these landowners because I respect them. They offer me to be on their ground. I don't pay anything. You know, it's just a good, I appreciate the opportunity, and these people want them gone bad enough that I treat it like it's kind of a job. Now, recently, I've been unemployed in that aspect. I just haven't been going. But I haven't gotten a call from a landowner complaining about a coyote in well over a year. And I mean,
now you know you've done your job.
Yeah, exactly. And they all know the situation's going on. You know, gas is not cheap. Coyotes do not feed my family. If anybody that listens to this watches the page, we've been doing a lot more fishing because fishing puts fillets in the freezer. At least that gas is going back to something useful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it is impressive that down here we still have a coyote problem, even though there are guys out there killing coyotes every day, every week.
Yeah.
We're not putting a dent in the number. We're just curbing it enough. And I don't know that we're even curbing it enough. We're keeping it down to a manageable level.
Yeah.
But yeah. Every year, a female has, what, 4 to 6 pups in a litter?
Yeah, or more.
3 of those are going to die? I mean, we're really not doing anything to stop the population.
Right.
Now, coyotes have their place in this ecosystem, and that's fine.
Absolutely.
I'm indiscriminate because the ranches, you know, some ranches, they'll have animals that, you know, they fawn, the coyotes will come and eat them. Well, every time a coyote eats one of those fawns, that ranch literally just lost anywhere between $3,000 and $50,000.
Yeah.
Depending upon what species that animal is. I indiscriminately kill every coyote, fox, bobcat, any predator that is legal to kill is getting killed if I come across it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of your keeping your herd alive. I mean, no different than keeping them healthy and alive during a drought. You have to keep them protected from what's out there to kill them.
Yep.
Do you have any
and other? I don't. Go ahead.
Do you have any other predators that you have to worry about out there? I mean, do you guys have cougar by chance?
So oh, yeah.
Worry about them.
We have mountain lions.
And do you have any right to kill them if you need to or no?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Really?
365 really? Days a year.
No kidding.
They're not regulated in the state.
That's crazy.
They fall under the same rule as coyotes. You can go hunt them with an A10 warthog if you had the means.
Because they're a non-game species.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're a non-game species.
Okay.
They're a native non-game.
Huh. Man, that's nuts. We got to get down there sometime. When we can, we'll try to set something up for sure because it would be nice to – it'd be sweet to go run around on – couple 20, 30, 40,000 acres and just shoot coyotes again. It's been a while since we've done that.
It might be a 5-hour drive from one place to the other, but we'll make it happen.
We'll figure something out.
We'll just get the snot out of it.
Right. So in the last 3-4 years of you doing this, what do you think has been your most memorable experience so far?
Well, watching my son miss an odd dad, that's always going to be number one, just because it's my kid, and I'm a little prejudiced whenever it comes down to my kids.
I get it.
The other one, I took a 4-year-old girl, her dad, and her 9-year-old sister hunting. We spent 2 days. It almost turned into a 3-day ordeal, but 2 days. The 9-year-old shot a 20-inch black buck and an awdad. And then the sister shot an awdad, and the cameraman shot an awdad the next day.
Holy cow.
I mean, that was one of the coolest things, right? Like, my whole deal for this is to get more people hunting. And if I could, you know, if I could do it for free, I'd take every kid in the country hunting.
Yeah.
I can't do that for free. And, you know, feed bills in general, stuff like that. You know, it's not feasible to do it for free.
Right.
But my passion is getting kids in the outdoors, getting people that may not have the opportunity in the outdoors. That's what I like. And so that's why any hunt with a kid is always like my top of the list. It's kids, veterans, elderly, and then everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing for sure. I mean, you mentioned your kid missing, you know, that any experience out there with my kids is kind of the same, you know, watching my middle boy, Owen, he's been having a blast fishing with me this year, watching him reel up a fish and smile and say, "Dad, I got one and you still haven't got one." Dude, beat me all day. I would rather see you.
Every one of them.
Exactly. I would rather see that. But have you taken anybody that came to you for their actual first hunt ever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've taken – there's been several people. And it, again, from a 4-year-old all the way up to a 65-year-old.
Yep.
I've guided everybody that I've guided their first hunt for has thoroughly enjoyed their hunt and wanted to come back and do something else.
Yeah.
Wanted to hunt something more. And it's – you just make it – you make it fun for them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's part of the hardest – probably the hardest thing about – like for me being a mostly state land deer hunter, that is hard to keep kids interested in. State land isn't a joke for a lot of people, you know, it's hunted hard. You got more people to compete with and you may sit for a week or two without seeing a single deer. And it's difficult to get them involved in, but I mean, that's kind of goes back to me wishing that baiting was allowed, at least for just to get the kids involved, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, Texas is a weird place, man. Like, we have public land, but Texas is primarily private. It's privately owned, you know, and it's everybody comes here to hunt, but nobody really understands that it's all paid hunting.
Yeah.
You know, you're paying guys like me, and I try to get along with every outfitter and every guide on the face of this planet. Cause one day I might need an animal that they've got access to that I don't have.
Yep.
But Texas is such a difficult and strange place to hunt because if you come here thinking you're going to go shoot one of these exotics on public land, probably not going to happen for you. You might get lucky and find an axis on, I know a piece of public land that has axis on it, but you may not see them for 2 months. You know, I wish there was more public land in this state, but there's just not. So it comes down to having to either lease a place, having to get in good with a landowner and switch out some work for some, you know, hey, let me come out and help you out, and in return, I will bring you hunters and kind of help fund your ranch.
Yep.
Or you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah. So how many ranches right now do you help manage?
I help out three in Campwood, one in Gatesville, one in Sanderson, one in Ira, and one in Alpine, Presidio, Ira Ann, Utopia, 9 or 10.
Jeez, Pete. And you're not doing this. I mean, there's absolutely no way you can do all that in one day.
No. So you're talking 12 hours. You're talking 12 hours from my furthest ranch to my furthest ranch.
So do you kind of make like rounds, or do you only go to ranches for certain reasons?
Some of these ranches I don't even have to step foot on.
Okay.
You know, the ones that I consult on, I don't have to step foot on. The ranches that I'm there to help out and, you know, kind of get their ball rolling or guide hunts for, those are the ones that I'm there quite often.
Okay.
I've got one ranch that my sole job, the only thing I do once every 10 days is go fill feeders. That's it. That's all I have to do. I just show up, fill feeders, and collect my check, and thank you. Have a good day. Now, it's... It's 60 acres. It's 60 acres and there's only one feeder on it. So it's not, you know, throw 6 bags of corn and load up in the truck and go home.
Yep.
And then there's other ranches where I'm buying blinds and cameras and, you know, whatever I can to help get them going. That's what I'm buying. And I don't have a ton of money. Like, I'm broke all the time.
Me too. Amen.
It's so hard to get ahead. I mean, I say it's hard to get ahead. If I didn't care about these ranches, it'd be easier to get ahead, but I care about these ranches and want to see some of them. I want to see all of the ranches succeed, but I put in a lot of my own money, and if I don't get it back, I don't get it back. I'm not mad about it.
So
I made an.
What I'm hearing is you do it for the love of it, not for the money.
Right.
Yeah. And there's so many anti-hunters that think that we just want to be killers. And you really think we're going to put ourselves in financial stress all the time to do what we
kill something?
Do? or just because we want to go be killers? That's not how it is.
Yeah. I don't care if I kill another animal in my lifetime.
Yep.
I could care less. If I'm putting somebody on their first animal or guiding hunt for somebody that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to kill, and I got to be a part of that process, that's what I care about.
Right, exactly. That's a cool memory for both sides.
Yeah. And some of my hunters, not saying that I remember every hunt that I've ever guided. Some do stick out a whole lot more, but I've stayed in contact with just about everybody I've ever guided.
Yeah.
Some of them are repeat. Some of them hunt with me one time and they go somewhere else because, you know, hey, either I'm off on my prices, I don't have that animal or whatever the case is. It's not, you don't always get repeat clients.
Yep.
But the ones that do repeat with you, those are the fun ones because we laugh and we joke and we cut up a little bit more than I, you know, the first time somebody hunts with me, I've got to put on my professional hat and be my straightforward, this is the way it is. When somebody's hunted with me 2 or 3 times, we kind of goof around and laugh and joke and you know, we just have a good time.
That's like deer camp.
Oh yeah.
You know, just like a family deer camp, go up there and bullshit with everybody, have a good time. I mean, a lot of those deer camps, most of those guys don't even go out deer hunting.
No, they're just there to drink beer and go to bed.
Exactly. But they're still hunters and they're still lumped into the asshole crowd of you guys just want to be murderers. They don't.
No. And I don't know, speaking of the anti-hunting crowd, I don't know what the best way to handle them half the time is other than just to tell them go pound sand.
Dude, it's a struggle every day.
I don't get it. Like, why? I don't put any energy into worrying about what the hell somebody else is doing.
Nope.
None. I could care less. Like, if you want to go do whatever, go do it. If it doesn't directly affect me, I don't care. Anti-hunters put in so much extra stress on themselves, worrying about what I do every day, worrying about what you do every day, worrying about what your listeners do every day. And it's like, for what? What are you accomplishing? Oh, okay. So you got a bill passed that says I can't night hunt something?
Yeah.
Dang it. I'll go hunt it during the daytime.
I mean, you know? We can't let them keep taking shit from us, because eventually they're going to take as much as they can and nobody will stop them. Right. But you've been on our page for a long time.
For years.
We get blown up on a daily basis from people like, I don't give a shit if you're out there eating your vegan sausages that you just bought at the store. I don't care. Why do you care to come to us just to call us names, wish us harm, tell us you're going to murder our kids? There was a guy a couple months ago I deleted. He said, I'm going to kill that boy, my son, and mount his head on my wall. Well, if I would have said that, dude, I would have been locked in the Facebook slammer again. But these people just get away with it. And it's so backwards. But we've had this conversation many times on this podcast. And it just riles me up, because I'm a little more feisty than Kevin. Kevin likes to kind of try to converse with them and try to get a little bit of a story. And I'm like, hey, piss off.
Go pound sand.
Exactly.
Yeah. I had a lady. I'm on TikTok a lot. Like, I have, you know, my following on there and stuff. And I was posting a lot of stuff, and I got account warnings or whatever the other day. And I was like, I'll back off. I had a lady the other day tell me, and it's a felony in Texas. She told me she was going to come over to my house, cut my high fence, and let all my animals go. And then she was going to shoot me. I said, fine. I said, here's my address. Show up. I want one of them. One time. Just show up.
They won't.
And I'm not an aggressive type of person, but don't push me.
Yeah.
Don't get me to that edge. But none of them they never show up. They never send anything that they say, oh, I'm going to send a bomb to your house and blow your whole family up. Please do. Like, just come blow me up one time, because I'm the one that checks the mail. I'll blow up.
Well, for clarity, they could only do it one time.
But they won't. They have yet to do anything they promised they were going to do. And it irritates. Like, if I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Ask any one of my exes. It might have taken me a couple days to get it done. But I just want one of these people to actually fulfill one of their promises. Like, oh, I'm going to cut your head off and stuff it on a wall. Like, please come over to the house. I'll give you a knife and I'll let you try.
You'll only do that once too.
Just one time. But they're all mouth. We as a hunting community, we've got to do better to not feed into their bullshit. But it's so hard to do. I mean, they're on and on and on and on and on. And finally, one day you just wake up and you're like, I've had enough of you.
Exactly. Exactly how it goes. One day you'll just be in a mood. Like, most of the time, if you say something stupid, I'm just going to block and delete you. And then you're done. But if it keeps on happening, and I wake up on that side of the bed one morning, it's like, game on.
You're going to get it all.
We're going to have a good day today.
Like, send me your address. I'm going to send you every skull and hair fur that I have in the house. I'm going to send it right to your doorstep.
Yeah, well, it's Austin, I appreciate you taking the time off tonight. Dude. Man, it's 11:30 here in Michigan when we're talking to you here. Where can everybody go to find you? Social media, website, anything you got? Where can people go to find you and the hunts that you offer?
Best way to get a hold of me is at Wicked7Outdoors on all social media accounts.
Okay.
I should be the only Wicked7Outdoors on the planet, I think. I might be wrong.
Found another one.
But that or Austin Pressey at Wicked7Outdoors.com. You can email me there if anybody's interested in booking hunt or figuring out more of what we do or what we have to offer. I mean, I don't have much of a personal social media presence. It's just all based under my company and what we do.
So pretty much Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all those.
Twitter. Search
Wicked7Outdoors.
That's it.
All righty. Well, Austin, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time, and you enjoy that that nice dry heat down there.
Yeah, I'll make sure it's a little extra dry whenever you come down.
That sounds great. I appreciate that. When we went to New Mexico, he got more rain in 3 days than he said he usually would get in the summer.
Well, it sounds like you need to come down here and give me some of that Michigan rain.
On my way.
All right, come on.
All righty. Thank you so much, Austin. Everybody that's listened, thank you so much for clicking play and download. If you would, like, subscribe, share, whatever you want to do. We appreciate it. We appreciate you listening. And we will talk to you all again next week on the Overdrive Outdoors podcast.